He waited just inside the barn door, trying to guess who would come for him first. Carmen, probably, he thought. But it was Bobby who stepped out on the porch, maybe 5 minutes after his mother had left to bring his brother home. He came straight down the steps and headed across the yard down toward the path to the bunkhouse. He had his ball cap on again, reversed on his head. Reacher stepped out of the barn and cut him off.
"Horses need watering," Bobby said. "And I want their stalls cleaned out."
"You do it," Reacher said.
"What?"
"You heard." Bobby stood still.
"I'm not doing it," he said.
"Then I'll make you do it."
"What the hell is this?"
"A change is what," Reacher said. "Things just changed for you, Bobby. Big time. Believe me. Soon as you decided to set Josh and Billy on me, you crossed a line. Put yourself in a whole different situation, one where you do exactly what I tell you." Bobby said nothing. Reacher looked straight at him. "I tell you, jump. You don't even ask how high, you just start jumping. That clear? I own you now." Bobby stood still. Reacher swung his right hand, aiming a big, slow roundhouse slap. Bobby ducked away from it, straight into Reacher's left, which pulled the ball cap off his head.
"So go look after the horses," Reacher said.
"Then you can sleep in there with them. I see you again before breakfast time, I'll break your legs." Bobby stood still. "Who are you going to call, little brother?" Reacher asked him. "The maid or the sheriff?" Bobby said nothing. The vastness of the night closed in. Echo County, 150 souls, most of them at least 60 or 100 miles beyond the black horizons, the absolute definition of isolation.
"Okay,"
Bobby said quietly. He walked slowly toward the barn. Reacher dropped the ball cap in the dirt and strolled up to the house with the porch lights shining in his eyes and the big papery moths swarming out to greet him. 2/3 of the killing crew saw him stroll. They were doing it better than the watchers had. The woman had checked the map and rejected the tactic of driving in from the west. For one thing, the Crown Vic wouldn't make it over the desert terrain. For another, to hide a mile away made no sense at all, especially during the hours of darkness. Far better to drive straight down the road and stop 100 yards shy of the house, long enough for two of the team to jump out, then turn the car and head back north while the two on foot ducked behind the nearest line of rocks and worked south toward the red gate and holed up in the small craters 10 yards from the blacktop. It was the two men on foot. They had night vision devices. Nothing fancy, nothing military, just commercial equipment bought from a sporting goods catalog and carried along with everything else in the Black Nylon valise. They were binoculars with some kind of electronic enhancement inside, some kind of infrared capability. It picked up the night heat rising off the ground and made Reacher look like he was wobbling and shimmering as he walked. 8. Reacher found Carmen in the parlor. The light was dim, and the air was hot and thick. She was sitting alone at the red-painted table. Her back was perfectly straight, and her forearms were resting lightly on the wooden surface, and her gaze was blank and absolutely level, focused on a spot on the wall where there was nothing to see.
"Twice over," she said. "I feel cheated twice over. First it was a year, and then it was nothing. Then it was 48 hours, but really it was only 24.
"You can still get out," he said.
"Now it's less than 24. It's 16 hours, maybe. I'll have breakfast by myself, but he'll be back for lunch."
16 hours is enough. 16 hours, you could be anywhere.
Ellie's fast asleep. I can't wake her up and bundle her in a car and run away and be chased by the cops forever."
Reacher said nothing.
"I'm going to try to face it. A fresh start. I'm planning to tell him enough is enough. I'm planning to tell him he lays a hand on me again, I'll divorce him. Whatever it takes, however long."
"Way to go," he said.
"Do you believe I can?"
she asked. "I believe anybody can do anything," he said, "if they want it enough."
"I want it," she said. "Believe me, I want it."
She went quiet. Reacher glanced around the silent room.
Why did they paint everything red? He asked.
Because it was cheap, she said. During the 50s, nobody down here wanted red anything because of the communists, so it was the cheapest color at the paint store.
I thought they were rich back then, with the oil.
They were rich. They still are rich. Richer than you could ever imagine. But they're also stingy.
He looked at the places where the 50-year-old paint was worn back to the wood.
Evidently, he said.
She nodded again, said nothing.
Last chance, Carmen. We could go.
Right now. There's nobody here to call the cops. By the time they get back, we could be anywhere you want.
Bobby's here.
He's going to stay in the barn.
He'd hear the car.
We could rip out the phones.
He'd chase us. He could get to the sheriff inside 2 hours.
We could fix the other cars so they wouldn't work.
He'd hear us doing it.
I could tie him up. I could drown him in a horse trough. She smiled bitterly.
But you won't drown Sloop.
He nodded. Figure of speech, I guess. She was quiet for a beat. Then she scraped back her chair and stood up.
Come and see Ellie. She's so beautiful when she's asleep.
She passed close to him and took his hand in hers, led him out through the kitchen and into the rear lobby and up the back stairs, toward the noise of the fan turning slowly, down the long hot corridor to Ellie's door. She eased it open with her foot and maneuvered him so he could see inside the room. There was a nightlight plugged into an outlet low on the wall, and its soft orange glow showed the child sprawled on her back, with her arms thrown up around her head. She had kicked off her sheet, and the rabbit T-shirt had ridden up and was showing a band of plump pink skin at her waist. Her hair was tumbled over the pillow. Long, dark eyelashes rested on her cheeks like fans. Her mouth was open a fraction.
She's 6 and a half, Carmen whispered. She needs this. She needs a bed of her own, in a place of her own. I can't make her live like a fugitive.
He said nothing.
Do you see?
He shrugged. He didn't, really. At age 6 and a half, he had lived exactly like a fugitive. He had, at every age, right from birth to yesterday. He had moved from one service base to another, all around the world, often with no notice at all. He recalled days when he got up for school and instead was driven to an airstrip and ended up on the other side of the planet 30 hours later. He recalled stumbling, tired and bewildered, into dank bungalow bedrooms and sleeping on unmade beds. The next morning, his mother would tell him which country they were in, which continent they were on, if she knew yet. Sometimes she didn't. It hadn't done him any harm. Or maybe it had. It's your call, I guess, he said. She pulled him back into the corridor and eased Ellie's door shut behind him.
Now I'll show you where I hid the gun, she said. You can tell me if you approve.
She walked ahead of him down the corridor. The air conditioner was loud. He passed under a vent and a breath of air played over him. It was warm. Carmen's dress swayed with every step. She was wearing heels, and they put tension in the muscles of her legs. He could see tendons in the backs of her knees. Her hair hung down her back and merged with the black pattern on the red fabric of the dress. She turned left and then right and stepped through an archway. There was another staircase leading down.
Where are we going? He asked.
Separate wing, she said. It was added by Sloop's grandfather, I think.
The staircase led to a long, narrow, ground-floor hallway that led out of the main building to a master suite. It was as big as a small house. There was a dressing area and a spacious bathroom and a sitting room with a sofa and 2 armchairs. Beyond the sitting room was a broad archway. Beyond the archway, there was a bedroom.
In here,
she said. She walked straight through the sitting room and led him to the bedroom.
You see what I mean? We're a long way from anywhere. Nobody hears anything. And I try to be quiet anyway. If I scream, he hits me harder.
He nodded and looked around. There was a window facing east with insects loud beyond the screen. There was a king-size bed close to it, with side tables by the head, and a chest-high piece of furniture full of drawers opposite the foot. It looked like it had been made 100 years ago, out of some kind of oak trees.
Texas ironwood, she said. It's what you get if you let the mesquite grow tall.
You should have been a teacher, he said. You're always explaining things. She smiled vaguely.
I thought about it in college. It was a possibility back then, in my other life.
She opened the drawer on the top right.
I moved the gun. I listened to your advice. Bedside cabinet was too low. Ellie could have found it. This is too high for her.
He nodded again and moved closer. The drawer was a couple of feet wide, maybe 18 inches deep. It was her underwear drawer. The pistol was lying on top of her things, which were neatly folded and silky and insubstantial and fragrant. The mother-of-pearl plastic on the grips looked right at home there. You could have told me where it was. You didn't need to show me. She was quiet for a beat.
You'll want sex, won't he?
Reacher made no reply.
He's been locked up a year and a half, she said. But I'm going to refuse.
Reacher said nothing.
It's a woman's right, isn't it? To say no?
Of course it is.
Even though the woman is married?
Most places, he said. She was quiet for a beat.
And it's also her right to say yes, isn't it?
She asked. Equally.
I'd say yes to you.
I'm not asking. She paused.
So is it okay for me to ask you?
He looked straight at her. Depends on why, I guess.
Because I want to. I want to go to bed with you.
Why?
Honestly? Just because I want to.
And? She shrugged.
And I want to hurt Sloop a little, I guess, in secret, in my heart.
He said nothing.
Before he gets home,
she said. He said nothing.
And because Bobby already thinks we're doing it,
she said.
I figure, why get the blame without getting the fun? I just want a little fun, she said, before it all starts up again. No strings attached. I'm not looking for it to change anything. About your decision, I mean. About Sloop.
He nodded. It wouldn't change anything, he said. She looked away.
So, what's your answer?
He watched her profile. Her face was blank. It was like all other possibilities were exhausted for her, and all that was left was instinct. Early in his service career, when the threat was still plausible, people talked about what they would do when the enemy missiles were airborne and incoming. This was absolutely the number one pick, by a huge, huge margin. A universal instinct. And he could see it in her. She had heard the four-minute warning, and the sirens were sounding loud in her mind. Now, he said. She was quiet for a long moment.
Will you at least stay with me?
She asked. The killing crew moved 50 miles closer to Pecos in the middle of the night. They did it secretly, some hours after booking in for a second night at their first location. It was the woman's preferred method. 6 false names, 2 overlapping sets of motel records, the confusion built fast enough to keep them safe. They drove east on I-10 until they passed the I-20 interchange. They headed down toward Fort Stockton until they saw signs for the first group of motels serving the Balmorhea State Recreation Area. Those motels were far enough from the actual tourist attraction to make them cheap and anonymous. There wasn't going to be a lot of cutesy decor and personal service, but they would be clean and decent, and they would be full of people exactly like themselves. That was what the woman wanted. She was a chameleon. She had an instinct for the right type of place. She chose the second establishment they came to and sent the small dark man to pay cash for 2 rooms. Reacher woke up on Sloop Greer's sofa with the Sunday dawn. Beyond him, the bedroom window faced east, and the night insects were gone and the sky was bright. The bedsheet looked damp and tangled. Carmen wasn't under it. He could hear the shower running in the bathroom, and he could smell coffee. He got off the sofa and stretched, wandered through the archway to the bedroom. He saw Carmen's dress on the floor. He went to the window and checked the weather. No change. The sky was hazed with heat. He wandered back to the sitting area. There was a credenza in one corner, set up with a small coffee machine. There were two upturned mugs beside it, with spoons, like a hotel. The bathroom door was closed. The shower sounded loud behind it. He filled a mug with coffee and wandered into the dressing area. There were two large closets there, parallel, one on each side. Not walk-ins, just long, deep alcoves screened with sliding doors made out of mirrored glass.